Welcome to the Ordained Women panel. I am Christy Money, and I will be conducting this meeting. This is going to be a very open forum. We want to answer a lot of questions that you have. We've anticipated a few of the hot button questions that might get asked.
Could you move closer to the microphone?
Sure. Is that better?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So.
Turn angle the speaker down.
Keep going. Okay. So, yes, we're going to answer a lot of questions that you might have, and some that we already anticipated. Some of the tougher questions, we'll try to get those right off the bat. And then when we finished our presentation, then, of course, feel free to ask us anything you want. So we're going to start with introductions, since we have the board here. All right, so I'm Dr. Money. I did my PhD at BYU, and I have a private practice now, specializing in women's mental health and faith transitions. And I am the new action chair. I filled Kate Kelly's spot, and that's me. So I have two kids, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and two on the way, as you can see. It's not obvious at all. All right, so we'll have, I guess, everyone come in order and introduce yourselves.
I'm Mark Barnes. I've been involved in Ordained Women since the launch event back in April of 2013. I have recently, up until recently, I've been chair of the Male Allies Committee, also treasurer and head of the Finance Committee. So as of now, I'm just head of the Finance Committee and focusing more on the business end of Ordained Women.
My name is Sean Carter. I am the chair of the Male Allies Committee. I bring a wealth of experience in this area. I've been male most of my entire life. Not sure I can count the last 6 months or so, but and so Deborah.
What? Oh, am I supposed to testify on whether or not you're male?
Just take my word for it.
Okay, I trust him. I'm Deborah Jensen. Like Mark, I've been involved since the launch event. I threw my lot in with people, and then Kate Kelly called me and said, "Hey, do you want to come and speak?" And I said, sure. When have I ever turned down a microphone? I am the current chair of the board and am the chair of the communication committee. So you see my name thrown around sometimes, occasionally. That's about it.
Good morning. I'm Brindis Roberts, and I'm from the South, and we dress up for everything, okay? So, and I joined the board in, I think, about September or October of 2014, and I'm the chair of the Intersectionality Committee. I'm an attorney. I practice law with my ex-husband, best friend, and I have two adult daughters.
Hi, Lori. Come on in. You're in the right place. I'm Joanna Wallace. I live in Atlanta, Georgia currently, although I'm from here, so don't say I'm from Georgia. And Brandis is, but... I homeschool my 4 kids. I'm currently the head of the social media committee. So all the tweets and Facebook posts and website management falls under me. And I'm going to have Lori come up and introduce herself. We're going to put her on the spot.
The super guy.
So come introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, I just ran up 2 flights of stairs. I'm from California. I don't expect traffic in Utah. Anyway, Lori Winder Stromberg. I've been, what was said about me? Anything?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, just, I've been a Mormon feminist activist for, 40 years? And since the late 19... I really am winded. And since the late 1970s, I've been talking privately about women's ordination and came up publicly in the mid-80s. So this is, it's been really a wonderful thing for me to see a new group of Mormon women actively advocating for women's ordination. I find it very gratifying.
Thanks, Lori. All right. I'm just gonna hold it. All right. Can you hear me better?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, first question. We're just gonna get this off the table. It's the elephant in the room. This is a post Kate Kelly ordained women that we have right now. So, what does this mean for the movement? So I'm gonna start with Deborah, and then Lori, and then Brindis. So here we go.
Cool. So we are actually not post Kate Kelly. Kate is still an active supporter. She's very active in our supporters group. If you're in it, she posts more than anyone. And we love that about Kate. She's passionate. That's probably the thing that we miss the most on the board. Kate's individual skill set is incredibly valuable. Her passion, her knowledge, we miss that, this body right here. But as a group, as ordained women, the organization doesn't change a whole lot when Kate resigned from the board, because for the last year we had an executive board in place. For the last 9 months, I was the chair of the board. Brindis has been working on bylaws, which she'll tell you more about. So we've been working on putting a structure into place to make sure that if any individual left for any reason, this movement would continue. And there are countless people who have expressed to us interest just in the last week when we said we're meeting for our retreat, who have expressed interest about serving and being more involved to volunteer either on committees or on the board. So while we miss Kate individually as a person and as a friend, and the skill set she brings is unique to her, she is not irreplaceable, and we would never diminish what she's done for ordained women, but we would also, I think it would be incredibly disrespectful and dismissive of the hard work and sweat and blood and tears that women have been putting into this for 3 years and 4 decades and more to suggest that if Kate Kelly leaves ordained women, the movement dies. It does not.
As Deborah mentioned, I have been working on bylaws. We have bylaws. We have a procedure to replace a board member. We have been getting incredible interest in the supporters group from people expressing a desire to be a member of the board. If you're in the supporters group and would like to make that and would like to express that desire, you can do so either in the group, or you can send a private message or an email to any of the board members. I was inspired to join Ordained Women in part because of Kate's just everything about Kate, just, you know, it sort of reached down to Georgia and grabbed me. And for those of you who know me and those of you who don't, I have an incredibly competitive streak. We will not let the board die for any reason. We will not let the movement die for any reason. So we are inspired by Kate's example, and we will continue to go forth.
And I think the only thing that I can really add is that Ordained Women continues to support faithful activism.
Well said. Thank you. All right. The next question is going off of what Lori just said. What does faithful agitation mean? What does it mean to us now, 2 years into it? All right. And so I'm gonna start by answering that one, and then Joanna, I'd like you to answer too, and Sean. So be thinking. Okay, so to me, faithful agitation reminds me of that the quote by President Hinckley about when he was asked if women could ever be ordained, and he said, "Well, yes, that would be possible, but we have no agitation for that. Our women are happy," and so we are here to to say that we are not happy with the status quo. But that doesn't mean that we lack faith. It's in fact because of our faith that we continue to move forward. And we will not shirk back. We will like for me, especially that these last couple of years and this last few months have been really difficult, and have tried my faith in the institutional church and local leaders. But at the same time, I know that they're not perfect. People make mistakes, and in perfect honesty, my faith has never been stronger than it is now. It's been tried, and I don't know what that's going to mean for my relationship with the institutional church in 5 to 10 years, but I know I'm here now, and I'm not giving up. So that's to me what faithful agitation means. We don't give up. We continue to raise the question, to do nonviolent, in-person, faith-affirming, direct action, which we will continue to do. And that's been an incredibly spiritual experience for me. There's nothing like using your very body to demonstrate your desire for further continuing revelation. So be expecting more of that in the future. All right, Joanna.
Faithful agitation to me is kind of ingrained in me. I'm a descendant of Hiram Smith, and so I'm going to go back to the beginning, and I'm going to say that James 1:5 kind of is the answer of what faithful agitation to me is, and that is, if any of you lack wisdom, let him or her ask of God, and give to all liberally and abradeth not, and it shall be given. So I'm here asking God how I can fully participate in my faith.
Thank you, Joanna. Okay, Sean.
I'm not a direct descendant of Hiram Smith.
Are you sure?
I wanted to be clear about that, all right? Let's be clear. I'm actually a fairly new convert, and I had someone in my ward ask me, they said, you know, if you don't like it, why don't you leave? And I explained to them, I can't because I'm black. By the way, that's not obvious. The lighting is kind of bad up here, but and most of my entire life, too. But here's the thing, is that for me, being faithful is that you do agitate, that you try to create Zion, and you do so respectfully. The truth of the matter is this, is that if I didn't have a testimony of the church, I wouldn't be here. There are other things to fight for in the world, and if I didn't believe that there's a power of God, that there is something that God likes about this church, then there's no reason to do this. And so I think, you know, the idea that any of us would be unfaithfully agitating, you'd find something else to do. You have to have, you know, a belief. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, so down the line, but there has to be something that you think is special about this church. And when I say church, I mean not the office building in Salt Lake City. I mean the real definition of church, ecclesia, the congregation, the gathering. I don't know a lot, but I do know that there's something special about this particular group of people, this particular body of believers, and that is what, you know, why I stay and agitate. And for my sisters who are not able to fully participate, we're just simply not as strong as we could be. As wonderful as we are, we'd be stronger if everyone was able to use all their talents, and that's, you know, what I'm here for.
Thank you, Sean. All right, the next question is, what brought you to ordain women? So I'm going to start with Brenda's, and then ask Deborah, and then... of course, and then Lori.
I think the best answer for me to that question is to read to you from my profile. And this is the sort of last paragraph, and it says, I am very thankful that the priesthood has been restored to the earth. However, every time I rejoice that one of my brothers has been ordained as a priest, I also ache for all women in the church and for the church. I ache because my wonderful, talented sisters have skills, training, and experience that could greatly benefit the church. I ache because in many parts of the world, there are wards and branches that are in desperate need of more leaders and more priesthood holders. And by automatically excluding women from consideration, the church is doing itself a disservice. I ache because so much of Heavenly Father's work is not being done because there are not enough priesthood holders to do the work. I ache because simply by virtue of our gender, all women are limited in the roles we can fulfill in the church and ultimately in the roles we can fulfill in building Heavenly Father's kingdom. As important as the work is, I cannot believe that it is the divine will that so many workers are not allowed to participate fully and equally. I believe women should be ordained.
That was powerful. Thank you. Okay, I can't follow that. Anybody who came to the launch event or who's ever heard me answer this question, I'm sorry, but it's going to sound exactly the same because it's the same. It's always been the same reason. I came to ordain women. I think I was on Feminist Mormon Housewives on the Facebook page on March 17th, 2013, and somebody wrote, "Have you seen this?" with like 8 exclamation points and question marks, and it was a link to the website. And I looked at it. I read every word I could find on that website because I thought, there's no way someone else actually feels the same way about this that I have felt for 25 years and is willing to say it publicly. I was concerned that I was joining up with a bunch of anti-Mormons, but I read the most beautiful testimonies. I didn't have any idea who Kate Kelly was. I sat up all night, and the next morning I talked to my husband and I said, "This has bothered me since I came to church at the age of 12. This has bothered me, and I have prayed about it and asked my leaders, and I have been patient, and I have been faithful. And now I cannot look my daughters in the eye and answer their questions of why. I refuse to tell them to wait when I could join up and do something about it." So I came to ordain women partly because I've always been a radical, bossy, know-it-all feminist and wasn't going to let anybody tell me I couldn't do anything. And partly because I believe in the power of the priesthood and I believe in this gospel and I have a desire to serve in that way. And this is my calling. I'm not allowed to have a calling anymore, so it's a good thing I've got this.
Thanks, Deborah. And let me just, here is Lori.
One of the doctrines I find most compelling about Mormonism is the belief that there is something essential about us that's co-eternal with God. And, I'm going to get teary. Which I believe makes us, I think that it's a doctrine that's foundational to what I believe is compelling moral activism, that we are radically free agents, and that because of that, we have the choice as to whether we will work with God for a more just and equitable world, or sit back and let the status quo and be silent and let inequity flourish. So I think that we have that choice as moral agents. And as I say, I think Mormon doctrine definitely supports a moral activism. And so that's one reason, I think that's one reason that I feel compelled to work for equality and justice and for everyone, not only just our focus is gender equality, but also for racial equality, LGBT issues, and that sort of thing. Again, our focus happens to be gender equality, but I think that most of my board members, most of our supporters would probably say that they support anything that enhances the human rights and dignity of all.
Thank you, Lori. I love that. We are radically free. We absolutely are. All right, question number four. And this is a finance question. What would Ordain Women do with funds, if we had more funds? And so we're gonna send this to our treasurer. So
he's a
man.
We know how it works.
Yeah. Yeah, women don't handle money in the church. But so I'm gonna ask Mark, and then
never gets old.
It doesn't for me. Especially with my last name. And then Joanna. So Mark and then Joanna.
Okay, I'll just say we have a finance committee that's comprised of myself, Dr. Money, and and Joanna. We've had a lot of people recently say, you know, we want things stepped up. We want to go big. We want more. And I think all of us on the board feel the same. Now, just as an aside, we spent a lot of time over the last few months putting the structure in place. So now we are a nonprofit corporation. We're a 501c3 approved by the IRS. We've got our permit from the state to fundraise. We have bylaws. We've done all the legal steps. We've been putting all the legal steps into place so that we're here for the long haul. It would be real easy if we didn't put those things into place to kind of get blown away. So I think we're about there now. And so fundraising and obtaining the resources to go big is going to be an important part of where we go from here. We have, if anyone's interested, a button on our website. You can push on donate. You can sign up one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly donor. But having a regular sort of flow of funds will give us a lot of capabilities. So, for example, I'm just throwing it out as an example of what's possible. We've been shut down largely in Salt Lake when it comes to any kind of advertising. Apparently, our friends down at the church office building have been making the rounds, and it's very difficult for us to get up a sign or anything. But they don't shut us down outside the state. So if we had access to more funds, we could do a lot of things outside of Utah. So, for example, maybe we would think of something like every time a temple goes up, we make sure there's a billboard nearby, or those types of things. So we really do want to approach this from a larger perspective than just here in Utah. Also, though, when we do actions, to make it effective, we need to be able to get a lot of people here. And so that may entail offering people some assistance in coming from other parts of the country. To be honest, Utah is not really necessarily our center of gravity when it comes to supporters of ordained women. If you look at our board, our center of gravity is really Atlanta. Yeah, so... So if we're going to do something even here where we want the brethren to be able to see what we're doing right there in their shadow, that also is going to entail resources to be able to make sure we get people here. So there's a lot of reasons why we're going to need funds moving forward. So if you like us and want to help, that is a real important way that we'll need assistance moving forward.
Can I just say really quickly, as we pass this down, that yeah, waiting in line outside at Temple Square is exciting, and like New York Times articles are exciting, but don't let anybody fool you. 501c3 status and bylaws—that's where the sexy work is, you guys. And these guys, particularly, have been doing all the sexy work without any attention, and I just want to publicly thank them for that. I know, right? Like it's been. It's been tough, but I want to publicly acknowledge the work and dedication that they have given to that without any attention publicly, because people don't understand what it is largely. But it's been a ton of work, and we would be nowhere without them.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that the best... The
the best way to kind of go for this is that the board gives and gives generously, but this is not intended to be a board thing. This is supposed to be, this is has always been started out as a grassroots thing from the people up, and so we formed this board because that's what the supporters wanted, that's what profile holders wanted, and so as we grow it, we have to understand that it's going to take all of us. Currently, what the finance is paying for is we started a podcast, so follow that on iTunes, and we've invested heavily in that. We've done goodwill actions. This past week, we handed out water bottles and to the people on the parade route on Pioneer Day out here. See, I don't know. It's not a Georgia holiday.
Called it Mormon Christmas.
Mormon Christmas. So we need both goodwill actions that that we've invested in, but then we also need bold, decisive actions that call upon our leaders to act as well.
Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like ongoing costs that are involved in our structure as well that maybe you don't think of. But for example, with the podcast, there's monthly fees and things that have to be paid, and different regulatory requirements that we have to meet. If you've never done a 501c3 or been involved in this stuff, you would be surprised about how many regulatory requirements there are. All those things have to be paid for on an ongoing basis. So in addition to the things you see, there's a whole lot of things you don't see that we need to pay for.
All right, thank you. Okay, now I have a question that we've been getting a lot from people. Why should women of color support the ordination of women, given that there are still vestiges of racism in the church? And a follow-up question is, how does a primarily white movement benefit from women of color? So I'm going to throw those two questions at Brenda's here. No pressure.
In case y'all didn't notice, I am a woman of color. Somebody was confused. My answer to the first part of that question is that, and it's not any sort of trickle-down theory, because I don't believe in trickle-down theory, it's not that at all. Women of color are members of the church. Women of color want to fully participate in the governance of the church. We want to be at the table. And that is one of the reasons why I joined the board. I wanted to make sure that if there was going to be a change, or when there is a change, that people who look like me would be full participants in the change, that we wouldn't have a repeat of what happened in 1978 when the priesthood temple ban was lifted. And if you look at the structure, it's still pretty much white male. Yes, there are some men of color in positions, but the predominant number of the leadership positions, the governance positions, are all held by white men. I do not want that to be the case when women are ordained. I want it to look like the beautiful rainbow that we are. I want all of us to participate, and I especially want women of color to participate. In terms of tangible sort of benefits beyond the full participation, I live in Atlanta. I worship in an inner city ward. Our ward is predominantly black. Our ward has a large number of single parents, primarily single mothers, and most of those single parents are black. I wanted to make sure that we put in place a structure that all of the benefits and all of the programs of the church, like the welfare program, the employment services, counseling services, all of those things, that women of color have equal access to all of those programs. And that's not going to happen if there's not somebody up there every day advocating for that, insisting on that, jumping up and down for that. One of the things in our ward that I was very insistent on, and people looked at me as if I was crazy when I first brought it up, was that just as we have a strengthening marriage class, we needed to have a strengthening single parents class, because what good does it do a single mother or a single father to go to a strengthening marriage class? When I first brought that up, you would have thought I'd said, let's have a devil worshiping class. But I didn't let that stop me, and I kept insisting, and I kept talking to anyone who would listen, and even some people who didn't listen. I sort of would chase them around the parking lot. And now in our ward, when we start our next session of special classes, we will have a strengthening single parents class.
Aren't I lucky to live near this amazing woman?
I'm moving to Georgia.
Everybody move to Georgia. All right. Okay, so the last question. So the last question before I give it to the audience is, what does ordained women see as its greatest challenge? I'm just gonna throw my two cents in, then I'm going to ask Sean. And I also want to recognize that that Danielle Mooney and her beautiful daughter are here. And I'm going to throw all the audience questions to you, Danielle. So, all right. I know, right? It is. Yeah, I understand. Okay, so greatest challenge. I'm going to cheat and say two things. One is I think deference to authority over personal revelation, and the other is benevolent sexism. So deference to authority. I think we grow up learning that that your leaders can never lead you astray. We've learned from our own history that that's just not true. It is possible. And as Lori was saying, as moral agents, I think it's our responsibility to be part of the revelatory process. And we know from church history that originally that's how it was, and we've since moved from that to a more corporate structure. So I will say that, and then the second is benevolent sexism. I think that's what keeps people from being more open about their feelings and desires, because I mean, hostile sexism is a bit easier to spot, right? To say, well, men are better than women, or go make me a sandwich, you know, we hear things like that, you know, that really upsets people, but in, with benevolent sexism, it's more subtle. It's women are so incredible that as nurturers, you stay in the home, and you don't need it. You don't need the priesthood. Leave the heavy lifting to the men. You know, we got this. Don't worry. So that's harder. It's like I said, more subtle. And I'm hoping that as time goes on, we'll see that people getting a more broad perspective of sexism and how invasive it is. All right. So I'm gonna throw this to Sean.
The problem is obviously all of you. I don't just mean you evil white men. You know who you are. Here's what I mean by this is that the more, as we would think, more enlightened and educated of us, and those of us who think of these deep issues, we tend to think ourselves in many cases right out of the church. And so we think, oh, well, I've gotten these great ideas, and now I'm so bright that I don't need all these people. And it's strange for me, you know. And by the way, it's hard for me to sort of, I'm teasing you, tongue in cheek, lecturing you, because I'm a new person here. But from my tradition, we don't leave because it's not perfect, because quite frankly, where would we go? We always stay and fight to make it better. And I think part of it is on us, is that, you know, one of the challenges is that we don't, you know, leave. Now, sometimes you have to. Sometimes, you know, it becomes some toxic. But sometimes we sort of put on our big people pants, and we simply tough it up. I have to tell you, but sometimes people are not going to like you. They're not supposed to. I think it's really a challenge to be able to stay and to not be, you know, contentious about it, but to say, hey, I have a place for me here. I was having an argument about a different issue, about police brutality, et cetera, and someone asked me, they said, well, if you're so unhappy, you know, why don't you, you know, go where you came from? And I was like, well, this is where I came from. My people built this place. You need to get out of my country. My people worked too long and hard to be here for me to cut and run. Now, here's the thing about it is I don't have that claim in this church. The only thing I've built in this church is three very, very slow Pinewood Derby cars. Technically, my son was supposed to build them, but you know how that works. I'll take the heat on that one. But some of you built much more than this, and your ancestors sacrificed everything and way too much for you to give the tradition over to to a temporary blip in the road. And so I think part of it is that we need to stay and be who we are and to you know, proudly claim this heritage and say this is our church too. And the congregation says?
Yes. Amen.
Yes. Yes.
Can I get an amen? All right. All right. So before we hand over the questions, I'm going to have Gina and Danielle introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Danielle Mooney, and I get to work with these fantastic people on the... I'm Danielle Mooney, and I am on the executive board with all of these wonderful people. I live in Boston with my husband and my baby, who just turned one last week. And I grew up in Minnesota in an LDS family, and I moved out to Boston a decade ago to go to Wellesley College. My mom, who is a convert, really wanted me to go to BYU because of the Mormons, which we had fewer of in Minnesota, and because of the price tag. And I told her that I thought that if I went to BYU, I would die. And so I picked a really expensive liberal arts college on the East Coast. Now, when I have to pay my student loan bills every month, I'm rethinking the wisdom of that decision. But I have been able to connect with Mormon feminism right where some of the most foundational parts of the movement began. And that has been really wonderful and something that I think that Exponent actually should work on a little bit, because I was at Wellesley for a couple years totally owning my feminism and my Mormonism, but I didn't know how to connect them. And turns out, like, y'all were up the street, Exponent, so they need to do a little bit better advertising, because it took me too long to find them. But it was through those experiences in college and through connecting with the Mormon feminist community that I was able to learn how to articulate the feelings that I had about women in the church, and come to my belief that women should be able to have access to the same blessings and service opportunities and leadership possibilities that the men in our church have, and that the young men that I was attending college with had, and were very quick to alert me to their greater authority. And I just, it seemed like an entirely natural evolution to me for women to have the opportunity to be ordained. And so for me, ordained women was a long time coming, and I'm really glad that we're here. Oh, I work with community support and volunteers, so I help pull people in and get them to do jobs for us, for volunteers.
Well, good morning, everybody. My deepest apologies for my lateness. I'm currently time-zoned and geographically challenged. But last night at the Smith Pettit Lecture, I was sustained as a bishop. I'd like the ordination to go with that. I've been I'm somewhat ecumenical, and I've taken the Eucharist from ordained women, and it's a powerful experience to have them bless and administer the Eucharist to me. And it's been a divine experience. And I believe wholeheartedly that we have, as women, a spiritual power that needs to be tapped and accessed for this church to remain relevant and powerful. So, thank you. Oh, I'm... Wait, what am I? Oh, yes, I'm the chair of the International Committee.
She's also from Georgia.
I sure am.
And then Lori, what position are you?
Okay. That's okay. I'm chair of the long-term planning committee, so.
Right on. I'm going to bring this microphone back out here for questions.
Question.
Oh, right here, Deb.
I'm not a deacon.
I've read a number of articles and actually seen some polls where men in the church seem to be more open to women having the priesthood than women, that much of the resistance comes from women. It kind of stuns me, but do you have any strategies, or do you discuss ways of approaching that? And do you see that as true?
Yes. I'm taking that one. I'm going to go with education. I think that the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. And I think that that's true for women. And my son just turned 12. And I'm going to give you a little background. He's autistic. But the switch the day he turned 12 in my ward was palpable. And the men in the ward taking him under his wing and trying to teach him and helping him to understand what the priesthood is, because my husband left the church 8 years ago, so we don't have a priesthood holder in the home. So the primary president so lovingly called me and said, "I'm so proud that you can finally have the spirit in your home again now that your son is 12. It's about education. We're teaching our 12-year-old boys exactly what the priesthood is, both spiritually and operationally. Thank you. We're teaching our boys what that is, and women don't even know what they're missing out on. So, to answer your question, I think that you're right. Men see that disparity, and I think that women too often are trained to hand that power away. We're trained that if we have a problem, we need to go to our bishops instead of to other women. And it's all about education. So that is definitely a huge part of what we're trying to do. Next.
Hello, is this on?
Yes.
My name's Donna Kelly, and as a profile holder, I would first like to say thank you for your sacrifices and for what you've done. I have sort of a long question, so I hope that's okay. First of all, I don't see how anyone could say that Ordained Women is not an organization of faithful agitators, because if we were not faithful agitators, we would have just left the church. We're staying and asking and following the Savior's commandment to ask and to seek and to knock. So, but my question is, I've sort of been in the twilight zone for the last couple of years, because people that I thought were loving and kind and faithful and righteous have been very unkind to my family, not just my daughter, but to us. How do I continue to remain a faithful agitator and a supporter of Ordained Women I mean, I think to me that's one of the greatest challenges of ordained women is keeping women in an organization, and men as well, who are being attacked, who are being, my family's been screamed at, we've been told that we're not worthy to wipe the noses of children in the nursery. We've been told, our mailbox is bashed over and over again. We can't keep it on without it getting bashed. It's currently now just sitting on the ground. But how do you continue to stay, and what advice could you give me and others who have been attacked and punished? Thank you.
It's hard. Let's not kid ourselves. Sean's right. People with progressive views and who are willing to say they believe women should be ordained who leave the church are our biggest challenge. But I don't think anyone sitting at this table would tell you you have to stay and take it all every week. I don't think anyone sitting at this table would say, could honestly say, there. I have a draft of my resignation letter. It's on my computer. I'm just waiting for the right moment to send it in. It's really hard. And it can be really hard to separate the institution from the gospel. You know, I love Mormonism. I am not a super big fan of Mormons sometimes. And I am not a super big fan of the Mormon church sometimes. And even harder than that can be when you love people you've gone to church with for 20 years who turn on you because you thought you had a safe place and you don't anymore. And I think for me, allowing myself distance, allowing myself to feel okay about not going to church. Sometimes the best thing I can do on a Sunday is go ride my bike or stay at my home with my family. But allowing yourself and finding other people who allow that too, the worst possible thing you can have is someone next to you saying, no, you really need to be at church. Because sometimes you just can't be there. And I mean, it is hard, you guys. It's hard. I'm just going to really quickly share, you know, I had a bishop that was an amazing bishop. He was bishop for 5 years, and for three, he and I were like, we were like bros. I was in the Relief Society presidency. When my second daughter got baptized, I wept in his office because no one in my family could participate. I'm from a family of non-Mormons. He did everything he could to bend the rules and the handbook to make sure they could be a part of it. And when I became a part of Ordained Women, all of that changed. And he called me names in front of my ward. And he called me names to my face. And he physically removed me from a podium at my youngest daughter's baptism. Like, some really horrible stuff that I still look at and wonder how he could do. But he's afraid. If I could give you one piece of advice other than allow yourself distance and time to be away, and this is really hard too, but every smashed mailbox, Donna, is someone who is afraid. They don't understand what we're saying. It's the same reason men are okay with this and women are not. They are afraid that we are devaluing what they do. The only thing we give women in this church is motherhood, and if we start saying that's not enough, it scares them. We have to look at people and recognize that faithful Mormons who respond with anger to us are afraid. And you can either walk away from that for your own safety and health, but also remember that. Try not to be angry in return. And I know that's not easy. I know that's not easy. My daughter told my husband that she hates our bishop, and it broke his heart. Anger is not the way to go here, though. They're afraid. And we have to just allow them to be afraid and recognize their behavior as that. I don't know. Anybody else? Mark?
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the Kelly family, too. I mean, they're the most wonderful people. I feel like I am an honorary Kelly. I mean, they are great people, and to see them treated the way they've been treated just appalls me. One reason I wanted to stand up right now, too, is to kind of say there's a we've talked a lot about, we have a lot of board members who do go to church every Sunday and are very active. I'm not one of them. After Kate's excommunication, I just decided it was psychologically too hard for me to go, you know. And to be honest, I've taken probably the least punishment here of anyone. And so I incredibly admire so many here who still go every week, and they face such, you know, terrible things at the hands of local leadership or people who were friends and all that sort of thing. But we've talked a lot recently about what it means to have to be faithful and faithful agitation, and I think that answer is probably a little different for everyone. And so someone might say, well, you're not going to church, why are you involved in faithful agitation? My answer is a little different because I was actually gone for almost two decades. I remember responding to people and saying, oh yeah, I used to be a Mormon. But at one point, probably in the fall of 2012, I realized I am a Mormon. It didn't matter that I didn't go to church. I grew up here in this culture. It permeates every part of my brain. I speak Mormon. I move Mormon. I am Mormon. And it would be like, you know, telling Albert Einstein, you're not Jewish. No, he's Jewish and I'm Mormon. And I think that part of it's my love for my people, my culture, my tribe. I'm faithful to that group, and I see them make mistakes. I see them do terrible things. That doesn't mean, like Sean said, I'm going to abandon them. I think there's valuable work here that needs to be done, and the only way it can be done is to talk to that group, to my tribe in their language, and say what I think. So if any of you aren't currently active, but you're like me and you feel like, yeah, I'm a Mormon, deep down inside, there's a place for you here in Ordained Women. And I just wanted to make that point.
I hope I get to work.
Thank you, Donna, for your poignant question. And my heart grieves for you and your family. What was done to you and your family was unconscionable and a travesty. And on the eve of Kate's excommunication, I want to assure you that I was contacted by my former bishop who wanted to do some pastoral work with me, concerned for how my heart was breaking. My stake president found me at ward activity and I was in a severe dudgeon. He said, I need to talk to you, and I wept in his arms. My current bishop, well, he's just been released. He was also very, very, very concerned. And I think the arbitrary nature, and Danielle was also suggesting that in her ward, a similar outpouring of feeling for those people who have agitated for equality were being, you know, in the wake of Kate's excommunication, were being vilified. So, and I think that the arbitrary nature of the kind of punitive action that has taken is actually indicative that there are spaces which haven't been reconciled, even in Mormon discourse. This isn't a monolithic sort of discourse that is compelling the whole church, which I think is great. As hard as that is, it is great, because it means it's a space in the church even itself that hasn't been worked out. So all I can say is that there is hope that in the broader church, conversations are happening like they have never happened before because of you and your family. And there is a movement, and there is a feeling afoot. And while you may be persecuted, it's a sacred thing that your family have done and undergone. And so I honor you for that. Thank you.
Mark, please clarify or correct something that I thought I heard you say earlier. You spoke of the difficulty in OW securing advertising in the area. I think you made general reference to billboards along the interstate. And it's fairly clear that Yesco and Reagan own all or most of those, at least in the Tri-County area. And tell us what you know about any specific steps that church headquarters may have taken to blockade OW ads.
Yeah, what I know is that they don't talk to us. Reagan and Yesco don't talk to us. We were able to get one up on Beck Street last Christmas time, if some of you saw that. That was done through a broker who represented 19 billboard owners, and one of those owners was willing to put up our sign. Since then, none. Joanna's had some direct action or contact with this, so why don't you come up?
I can tell you that I made probably 3 weeks worth of calls on the almost practically full time to advertising in different avenues all throughout Salt Lake and Provo. And I would have companies say, yes, absolutely, we'll take your money. And then we'd send them a proof of what we wanted. And I think at the time it was just the Christmas picture. It was a Christmas tree saying, you know, well, what? I don't know. Faith precedes the miracle. Merry Christmas. Love ordained women. And they would say, okay, thank you. And then 2 days later they'd call and say, we've been informed we are not allowed to work with you. So whoever is controlling that, I don't know. But I do know that 3 weeks worth of work has me realizing that the church runs Utah. And I live in Georgia, so that's really weird. But if any of you happen to know independent ways to advertise for ordained women, talk to me because I'm the social media manager, and I would love to do lots of different things. But I know that according to the avenues that we have looked into, all the way from playbills to billboards to buses and programs and ski lifts. I mean, we haven't been able to have anything touchable. So, if you have information, let me know.
First, I just want to say thank you to all of you for the really holy work that you're engaged in. You've really touched a lot of people's hearts, and I know a lot of times we hear those really hard stories and the negative reactions and the silent work that you've done is touching people's hearts, and I don't know that you always hear that, so I wanted to start off saying thank you. And the question that I have for you is, what do you need from those of us who have been touched? What can we do? What support do you want, and how can we help move your work forward?
You should friend me on Facebook, and then we'll find a job for you specifically. But for everyone else as well, you can also friend me on Facebook or message me or Ordained Women. Some things that we are really useful and valuable to us are profiles. Those are one of our strongest assets. Okay. Like 3 years ago, no one except Lori, okay, would own that they believe that women in the LDS Church should be ordained. 3 years later, we have over 600 profiles.
660.
660 profiles. Okay. And I can see some people are like, ooh, I want to be 666. So you send us a profile, okay, and you, that might be you. They're so valuable to us, and they're valuable to our community. Each profile is someone saying, I'm creating a little bit of space around me in our community, and I'm making a little room to say, this is what I believe, okay? And this is what I think that the church needs to do. The next thing you can do, like us on Facebook. Facebook page likes are so helpful in that the Facebook sees our posts as more valuable the more people that like our pages, and so the views reach more people. So the things that we're putting out on Facebook about ordained women, about women in the church, about gender equality and religion more broadly, about that various activities that we're engaged in or that the Mormon feminist community is engaged in, those reach more people when we have more likes on our Facebook page, and that's very helpful. And then if you want to volunteer for ordained women, your best first step is to submit a profile, and then we have you in our supporters group and in our group of people, and we have a list of our committees and the various responsibilities, and we would love for you to come and join us and help out. And then the last way that you can help us is when we have direct actions, show up and put your body on the line with ours and make space, not just intellectually and spiritually, by putting up a profile and saying, like, I'm creating space for myself to say that I believe that women should be ordained. Let's make some space in our communities with our bodies by physically representing that there is a desire for women's ordination in this church. And so those are the ways that I have on the top of my head. Christy is going to have some more.
Thank you, Danielle. And as action chair, I second that motion. Everybody use their bodies. All right. So I'm going to close with my testimony. But first, for those who have more questions, you can ask us here. We also have a booth, the Sunstone booth. So come to us. We're happy to answer questions. But I'm just going to bear my testimony that I know that God loves all His children equally, and that my experience in Georgia is the minority. We have some survey data out there, so I'm gonna bear my testimony with surveys. You know, it's what researchers do. So that only like less than 15% of our over 660 supporters have received pushback or discipline. So I guess I'm just having some bad luck in Georgia, but in other areas the people are just fine. And Provo and Donna Kelly, it breaks my heart. But we're lucky that it's not the norm. And thank you all for coming again. Ask us any questions you want. We're happy to answer. Thank you for coming.